This is the Andy Central Podcast. My name is Andy Dowling. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Another week, another episode for you guys, and I really hope you enjoy it. So let's get into it. This week's guest is Matt Bell, Matthew Bell. So Matt is the guitarist in Trolldhagen. So if you don't know of this band, you will soon discover. I'll put links over at andysocial.net. Check them out. They are currently, as I'm recording this, about to embark on their European tour with Aylstorm. They've just wrapped up a small Australian tour. They've just released a new album called Idiosyncrasies. I probably completely butchered that, which has got an album cover that is a picture of a crab with a scooter. I won't go into any more detail than that. That's enough for you guys to go and check it out, I'm sure. Artwork was designed by Salty, Andrew Saltmarsh, who's previously been on the podcast as well. So everybody's connected. So I'll have everything over at andysocial.net, so go over there. But yeah, Matt and I caught up not too long ago at a cafe, had a couple of coffees, and shot the shit for an hour or so. And Matt's had a bit of history with us. He's played in Lord as a filling guitarist when Tim had a bit of an arm or hand injury. I can't remember what was wrong with him, but he couldn't play guitar for a bit, so we had him as a singer only. And Matt jumped in to do a few shows with us and play guitar. And he's also done some work with TY, who used to be in TY actually edits this podcast. Hi, TY. And TY used to be in Lord as well. And TY and Matt have done some stuff together with Germ, Autumn's Dawn, and a bunch of other stuff as well. So anyway, we cover a bunch of this stuff in the chat. I'm going to stop crapping on. Please support Matt and everything that he's involved with. Why am I saying all this stuff? I could say at the end of the episode. Anyway, please enjoy this episode with Matthew Bell of Trolldhagen. How exciting is this?
I'm ecstatic.
Ecstatic. How you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Andy. How are you?
Yeah, good. I'm trying to drink my coffee and talk at the same time.
I'm trying not to put on like a TV reporter voice.
What's your TV recorder voice?
I don't have one, but it just feels like I'm holding this. It feels like I should have one.
Do you feel really self-conscious that we're sitting
so
like in the most central point of this cafe?
I think everyone thinks we're a big deal.
They're
like, oh shit, who is that?
Who are these guys?
Maybe I should ask for their autographs.
did you ever think like starting off in NightQuest and getting getting to here now, sitting in this cafe with microphones?
If you told 16-year-old me that I'll be talking to the Andy Dowling from 16-year-old me's favourite band Lord, I would legitimately be stoked. Now not so much.
Now it's like bit of an anticlimax.
It's like, sweet, really. I'll get a hot chocolate out of this.
That's right. The perks of being in a super high profile band now.
Tell me about it.
Sorry.
Tell me about it.
Oh yeah. Congrats on BMX Terminator.
Thank you.
I had to ask you the title again before we started recording.
It's okay. There's not too many metal songs about BMX tricks. In your defense.
It's pretty catchy. I was showing Jess last night, and Jess is pretty hard to impress now. And as soon as she saw the video footage of that robot actually riding the bike, she lost her shit.
Simon did that. I can't watch it without crying.
It's like the best mix of like the chorus, like as far as placement, that video footage with the chorus. It's
amazing.
Yeah, I don't know whether there was any sort of comedic strategy there, or it just naturally flowed that way.
99% sure that Simon would have just YouTubed robot riding a bike, and that was the first thing that came up, and he was like, oh, that fits perfectly.
And why is he the only person that's featured in the video?
Because, yeah, that's a good question, because he edited it.
Oh, okay.
That's a question for him. I didn't think of that before. We have footage of all of us.
I was like, right at the end, I'm like, oh, that's cool, here's a bit of the band now, and it's just Simon just doing a fill.
In his defense, it's a cool drumming part.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Guitaring isn't very impressive. So I'll give him that.
So that's the first song off the new album. I'm just doing all the stock standard, like, hey, how's the new album going? Blah, blah. It's pretty out there. But I guess some of the stuff that you've been doing previously has been out there, but it still looks like you're taking it to the next level.
Yeah, it's good because this album, like, we started off, as you would know, I don't know if anyone listening to your podcast would know, Trolldhagen, my band, started off as, like, a bunch of teenagers wanting to be Norwegian and, like, legitimately live in a forest in Norway. So like, we were all on board with the heathen folk stuff, and like, over the years we've slowly become less and less that and more of ourselves, and ourselves are just idiots to think stupid shit is funny.
You don't even have like when you started, like, as you said, it was like this folk metal sort of thing, and you, like, image wise and everything.
We had like pelts and stuff.
Yeah.
We had animal fur on stage.
And now, I don't even know what your image is now. You don't really have one. It's just
whatever
floats your boat.
Yeah. And I think that's cool, and that fits us. Especially because it's not our job, so we're not really bound to... Like, you know those, like, crusty European bands where they're 50 and you know they do not want to be doing thrash metal, but they have to wear that denim jacket?
That's it. People get pissed off if they suddenly got rid of it.
Yeah, it's good for us because we don't really have any... There's nothing keeping us doing what we're doing, so we just kind of progress as we go. And for some reason, we've kind of degressed into just immature stupidity.
So it doesn't matter if it crashes and burns.
Yeah, well,
it doesn't matter.
It's almost like we're trying to crash and burn, but in such a cool way that everyone's on board. And it works. Like, it's like our album cover is a crab on a scooter doing a tail whip. Like, that's sabotage for sure, but in a good way, because everyone's like, well, that's fucked. I never would have guessed that.
Is that... Oh, well, that concept alone, who in the band came up with that? Was that you?
Do you know the scary thing?
Yeah.
We're all so on board. Like, our group conversation is just like... Oh, what if there's a crab? And it's like, haha, that's funny. What if the crab's riding a scooter? Haha. Wait, what if the crab's doing a tail whip on a scooter?
Oh, so it's just everyone backers and forwards.
Yeah, we literally had a back and forth argument because we all wanted the crab to have sunglasses. But Pete was like, no, I think it's too ridiculous. And we're like, no, we like it. And then had a bit of a 10-minute heated discussion about whether the crab should be wearing sunglasses.
Has it got glasses? No.
Pete won out in the end. He was right. It was a bit messy. But the idea of a crab wearing sunglasses when his eyes don't line up.
He could have, like, held them...
They're actually falling off his head. So the implication was they never worn his head in the first place.
Oh, right, there we go. Some artistic genius.
Actually, that's where it comes from. We put a lot of effort and thought into being as stupid and nonsensical as possible. That's what it's all a result
of. That's the purpose of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was that the case before this album, like with the last album, or was it more of a case when this last album sort of finished up?
I think... The chronology of Trollhagen, if you really want to get
into the
non-exciting. So we start off, first EP is like full-blown, just us ripping off all the European bands. Then our first album, Ramshackle, which we actually recorded with your dear companion, Lord Tim. Ramshackle, that kind of starts to get a bit wacky because we've always, like me and Jarris, the singer who started it with me, we've always been to like Primus and Frank Zappa and a bit of weird stuff. So that kind of slowly crept in with our first album. Then our second album was even weirder, but still a bit like fantasy based. Mm-hmm. And then like that was 3 years ago, and since then we've all grown up a bit and we're just like, we don't really identify, I guess, with like the folk metal scene, or even like no one else in the band really listens to metal except for me.
Yeah.
And so we're just kind of like, well, let's just do stupid shit. let's just be as true to ourselves, and scarily, that crab on the scooter is us being true to ourselves.
It's pretty cool because I think some of the stuff that when you were last touring, I mean, you guys had, I don't know if you were wearing this on all the shows, but you had like the whole surf life saving thing happening.
I reckon that was the best stage where we've had.
It was pretty good. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
No spoilers, but are you going to go just on a completely different tangent? Because obviously there was a video you put up last night, or Simon put up last night as well.
How sick is it?
Where, is Jarris in the trolley?
Yeah, we're doing promo photos. And we just found a trolley. It sort of worked out perfectly. But I'm not sure if that's going to be our image. But we have definitely always try to change it up so that we don't have a defined image. And that's cool. I think the fans like going to show me like, what the hell are they going to be dressed as tonight?
Like, are you going to change it from show to show? Or are you just going to try and stick with one thing for the shows for this particular album?
For Europe, I reckon we'll probably have between maybe just like two or three different things, just to make it... Because it won't matter. The people at the shows won't know the difference, but at least for us, it'll make us a bit...
Yeah.
And mix it up a bit.
Yeah. Do you already know what they are? Or have you got an idea?
I have a vague idea, but usually at like the 11th hour, it comes together, and somehow Jarris always pulls out this amazing costume in like... 2 minutes notice.
Is he the costume designer in the band?
No, but he's always more elaborate than everyone else.
Oh, okay, alright. So he's just trying to show
everyone. He's the
focal point. Yeah. He's the center of attention.
I'm always super trying to push the idea that me, Pete, and Simon should be wearing the same thing, and Jarris should be in the center wearing something different, so it kind of has a cool...
Jarris and the...
Front man. Jarris and the Trollhagen.
Yeah, and the Trollhagen, yeah, that's right. Was it the last album that you did with Tim, or was it the album before?
Album before. Last album we did with Ryan Huttens.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. So this album?
We recorded vocals here in Wollongong with Tim Yatris.
Yep. TY.
He edited them and engineered them. Then we did...
edits his podcast. Shout out to TY.
Exactly. So he can edit this out or make it the main focal point.
Yeah,
just
TY is awesome. Awesome.
Equinox
awesome,
Studios.
Awesome.
What was I saying? Yeah, so we did vocals with him. And then we did drums up in Newcastle with Ryan. Then I did guitar and bass in my bedroom with Pete just because... Right. We're a poor band. That's how it works. And then Ryan mixed and mastered it in about a day because we had a really strict deadline. But we're really happy with how it turned out. So.
Yeah, all right. So it worked out well. Yeah. So just guitars and bass, done it yours?
Yeah. Oh, and I did all the orchestration, but that's like just on my computer.
So you've been doing that for a while from like home recording?
Yes. Yeah, it's a very degrees of success.
I think I vaguely remember... Must have been Ramshackle or something like that, because I think you did the orchestration on that.
Yeah.
We started doing it then, because I remember Tim talking about it, because you had to give him some files.
Oh, MIDIs
like
and stuff. Yeah, I've always done it, but it's kind of just slowly gotten to the next level with each release I've done.
Have you actually like done online tutorials or anything like that to learn how to do it, or do you just sort of...
I'm anyone who like knows me and knows stuff knows I'm so bad at actually doing things.
Yeah.
I have such a quick workflow for myself because I've been doing what I do for myself so long.
Yeah.
That like actually learning how to do it properly just throws me off.
Just don't want to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just like, I'm a fast MIDI man, you could say.
So with all your bad habits, it just is what it is.
Yeah. I'm too far gone at this point. Like I always try and learn stuff. I'm just like, I'm not a technical guy.
Yeah.
Like I don't like mixing. I don't really have the ear for it. So
I just, for years, Tim's always pushed so hard for us to record like our guitars and everything at home on our own like PCs and whatever, and then just send the files over, and then he can dump
them
in and
fix
them up.
That's the way to do it.
We've never done it though. Mark's done a little bit of it, and I've just never... I remember one point years and years ago, I sat down in front of the computer, had Sonar up, had everything set up. Tim had actually set up all this stuff for me earlier on because I just don't have the patience for it, and I had the track to play along with, and I got like the first two bars in and fucked it up, and I went, nah, stuff this, turned off the PC and just went and got a beer and did something else.
I think that's bad.
And and I just don't have the patience for it. And I've always loved the idea of recording myself and programming stuff and whatever.
But the actual doing it.
And it even got to a point, and this is how bad I am. Last night I was sitting on the couch and I'm like, I need to find out a way of recording riffs into my phone but without using anything.
It's almost like as if you had some podcast equipment you could record riffs.
Well, I didn't even get that far. That was too complicated. So I'm looking up apps on my phone to see if there's anything.
There's
like,
heaps.
Well, there was like a GarageBand
one,
and then that was shit because I didn't want to use like a preamp or anything like that, and so I'm like plugging straight into my phone.
You don't even need that, just use the mic on the phone.
No, it was crap. It sounded like shit, so I just gave up and I deleted all the apps and then
ooh.
Yeah, I know.
No, but I totally get that laziness on this because we've never done guitar solos before, and for some reason I've started doing a bunch of bitching guitar solos, and then so like my demos are really in depth, they're pretty much the full song, and I went to re-record guitars, and one of the guitar solos I'm like, oh, I can't be bothered, so I just kind of quantized that it moved a bit more in time.
So the original demos on
the
album?
Yeah.
I think there's some of that stuff that we've done where Tim's recorded stuff and like sort of on a demo and he's gone, you know what, that's actually pretty good. I'm just going to keep that.
I'm kind of like a strong believer in that an album is always just going to be trying to sound as inspired as the demo.
Yeah.
It never does.
Yeah.
Like the first, like when you're just like, oh yeah, that's a good idea, let's do it. Like it's never going to sound as good as that. Yeah, especially
it's something about like that feel or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. The vibe's
one.
Never going to be the same. So like, especially like if you sit there doing the same thing for like 10 hours, you're like, that's just going to have to do.
Yeah.
I've had enough.
It's like when you're trying to learn like a riff or something like that or a particular section, and the more and more you concentrate on trying to get it right, the more you fuck it up. The worse it gets and the longer it takes, and eventually you just have to stop and then do something else and come back, and within one take you get it.
Yeah, it just sucks it out. Yeah. I'm that with recording. I don't really like playing guitar. I like writing music, but I have to play guitar as a means of like getting my music out, and like I'm just so bad.
So you're not somebody that has like a strong passion for guitar? And
I really enjoy playing it, but I never learn other songs. I play it like to play pop songs or just to write music.
Yeah.
And like even when I did an album with LT a couple of years ago, I remember he said to me, I gave him the dry guitar track, he's like, wow, you really haven't been keeping up with your playing. It was true, though.
Tim's so blunt at
times. When I did those Lord Fillin shows when I was, like, 18, I wasn't even good then, but, like, I've never been at that level again.
That's your peak?
That was my peak. Yeah, and so it was just been downhill from there.
I can't even remember. How many shows did you do?
Oh, thanks.
No, I can't.
I thought that was special moments for me.
No, like, I remember you being in the band for a few shows.
I think it was, I want to say between 4 and 5.
Yeah. I remember it was a really sort of horrendous one that we did out in Blacktown. Yeah, for that radio station.
I had that the other day because I'm a high school teacher, for those of you listening at home. And these kids were like, oh, show us your band. I'm like, I'm not showing you the crab BMX band. So I'm like, oh, yeah, check out, this is when I had long hair and was young and good at guitar. I showed them that. I was playing to like 50 people in the tent.
Oh, that was so bad. And then when you we're talking about image before, I was wearing like a Ghostbusters t-shirt and cargo pants or something
cargo
like that.
Pants. Oh,
that was when like zero effort put into anything. I think we knew what we're walking into. And so the effort level was just at bare minimum.
I think it's better than everyone else just wearing Lord t-shirts, which I think is what
we do that now. Like just
Iron Maiden.
Yeah, that's it. We're merchandising. We're gonna get that branding out there. And it's easy because at least I don't have to think about what to wear.
At least you don't have to buy a t-shirt.
That's what Tim's been doing for years. Like, Tim's wardrobe's just Dungeon and Lord stuff, so I don't think he's paid for a t-shirt in years, or whenever he gets a free t-shirt.
Well, technically, he's paid a lot of money for a lot of t-shirts.
Very true, very true. That's a different perspective.
He just gets one of the run of a thousand or whatever.
Yeah, I think the only hassle that we have now when we play live is just to make sure we're not wearing the same t-shirt, because I think then that gets it.
I think me and Ferno are wearing the same t-shirt. It's a weird look.
Yeah, I remember that show, and then I remember there was one, I think we did the Gaelic.
There was two with Days End. One was at Canberra, I think. That was the first first song. And the second one was at Gaelic. And then I think it was that Blacktown one, and then one with Paul Di'Anno.
Oh, at Waves?
No, it was at the Gaelic again.
Gaelic again.
The great Paul Di'Anno. I don't know how great he was at the time.
It was so great that we did two shows with him on two separate tours, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just had to come back for more.
But, I just remember we weren't allowed to look at him when he walked past or some ridiculous thing like that.
Yeah, I remember that. He was really, really cranky, which I don't think that's a new thing. I think that's standard Paul Di'Anno.
I think he's a cranky old man.
Yeah.
As if you wouldn't be cranky if you get fired from a band. And everyone's like, wow, the guy who replaced you is the best singer of all time.
Yeah.
And you're a cranky old man.
And then he hates being recognised as the guy who sung in Iron Maiden, but then tours on it.
Yeah, Paul Di'Anno's Iron Maiden. And hates being recognised, yet he's this like 8 foot tall, big fat, bald guy covered in tattoos. It's like, maybe...
Oh, man.
A bit more inconspicuous then.
Yeah. I think there are okay shows for us, though, I think.
From memory, the reception was pretty good.
Anyway, so Autumn's Dawn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a band.
That was a band. What happened with that one? Was that TY and you together? Or?
Yeah, so pretty much what happened was when Enslaved got announced, Germ got asked to do a show at the Sydney show, which is the Manning, and that would be the first Germ show ever. And Tim, who I'd never met before, asked me to play guitar for it. And I was actually a Germ fan, so I was stoked. And then we got along really well. And
what did he ask you?
I don't know. I think actually because Simon was drumming. So Simon from my band, Child Hogan, was drumming. And I think LT might have just said, oh, Matt can play chords.
There you go, networking 101.
Oh, I hate networking. But I think we just got along really well. And yeah, and then I sent him a couple of riffs. He's like, oh, these are sick. Let's do a demo.
Yeah.
And we did a demo in like a couple of days.
Yeah.
And then his old label at the time put it out as an EP. And then shortly after, we recorded an album. And the album's like... We kind of did a bait and switch because the EP were like, oh, this is going back to the roots of austere. It's really suicidal, depressive black metal. And it was. And then we had an album and was like, man, I'm so keen for this album. And the album's like pop songs. It's kind of like, did you ever listen to Grey Waters?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like
a
not as good version of Grey Waters. Yeah. And so, like, people liked it for the most part. But
I've got the CD at home somewhere.
Gone.
Yeah, it's the Digipack white
booklet. It's good, isn't it? Yeah.
The packaging's amazing.
Yeah, like, the packaging eclipses the content. But yeah. I really like that album, but I think a lot of people were just thrown because we really sold it as something it wasn't.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's classic Matt Bell and Tim Yatras move. If you track anything we've ever done.
Just do the complete opposite.
Yeah, tell everyone we can do what they want here, then don't do it. Yeah. But then we've been writing stuff we've probably literally written almost 6 albums worth of stuff, but it's just never materialized. Like, we keep getting distracted with other things.
Oh, it's good to have something up your sleeve anyway. If something dries up, you can always throw something out if need be. But I don't know how the fuck TY has managed to work out all these deals over the last several years, like through Germ and everything like that, like the label in Europe and getting these advances and then doing stuff in Europe and whatever. It's just incredible. Like, he's just been able to create this little empire on his own.
Man, it's funny. When we went to do the European Germ show last year, like on the first night, there was like this pre-festival show, and we're there, and like it's me and my girlfriend and Tim and his wife, and we're standing there, and this these like little Italian boys walk up, and like they're like, "Excuse me, Tim, we come from Italy to see you. Can we take photo?" And he's like, to them, they're black metal god. He's there in shorts, thongs, and a flannel with aviators, and he's like, "Yeah, fucking sure." Probably the funniest thing I've ever seen. Like, no, thank you so much, and like shakily walked away.
It's so funny. I still remember when he had Germ Suicide years and years ago, and the whole point of it was to record like the worst guitar possible. And I remember being
editing this, you know.
Yeah, that's all right. And we were at his parents' place, and he was showing me riffs that he'd recorded on guitar, and then he had like synth stuff that he was doing. But at the time, like, I'm pretty sure he was saying, like, he was just trying to make it as bad as possible. And that was half the fun of it, because it was just that depressive, extreme black metal sort of stuff. And then I think it was more or less after he left Lord. And then it just, like, I just wasn't paying attention. And suddenly there's these albums being released, and I'm listening to it going, holy shit, what's happened? This is incredible.
Yeah. And it's funny, because just some of the stuff, he can edit this one out if he wants, because I don't know if it should be out there. But, like, he was doing guest vocals for some Ukrainian black metal band.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Oh, can I just do them at yours?" And I just moved back into my parents. I was like, "Yeah, sure, come over." And I had my computer set up in my little sister's room, and it was like a pink bedroom with dolls and stuff. And he's like doing these screams. Then we went to Europe last year, and people have like that album's patch on their shirt. And so I'm like, man, the vocals recorded in like Boston, me, like, so beach town in a pink bedroom while there's like surfy kids walking past the window.
Oh, man, it's like, I was saying to you before we started recording, I was meant to do a podcast with TY the other week in Brisbane. It didn't quite happen. We just got drunk instead, as you do. But I'll have to pick his brain about some of this stuff, because it's been pretty fascinating to see how much he's been able to do, but with knowing his mentality and knowing like his attitude towards a lot of this stuff, it's just so, so good.
I don't know if he'd agree with this, but I think like me and him are kind of similar in the same way. We at half don't really care, act like, and the other half act like we don't really care. Like, so when we're writing together, it's like, "Oh, this will be a heap shit, let's do this, oh, that's a dumb idea, huh?"
Yeah.
But at the same time, we're like, "Oh yeah, I hope it actually sounds good." So I think that's kind
there's
of
a little
we
bit
kind
of effort put into it, still. It's, I mean, of course
we don't put in a great deal of effort, but we do care about the outcome, I think.
Yeah.
But we wouldn't admit that.
It's probably like you're taking it somewhat seriously, but you don't really care about how it's perceived, or
I guess maybe. I don't think it even gets that far in the thought process.
No, I think I'm just probably digging too deep here.
Just throw people through a loop, I think, is the thing.
And you made this point last night about specifically Germ, how majority of the band, or actually almost everybody in the band, has played in Lord.
At one point or another, the Germ backing band's always kind of changing, but so far it's obviously TY who drummed in Lord and Dungeon.
Yeah.
And I play guitars for the most part in Germ, and I did the fill-in shows when LT hurt his hands. And then Simon, who filled in for... Who did Simon fill in for? No one.
Yeah, he kind of...
Daryl and Damon.
Yeah. He was one of, like, three that filled in, yeah.
And then Rob Giles filled in for you at a show.
Yeah.
Then I know... And Jimmy plays guitar in Germ here and there. And,
oh, yeah.
And he's best friends with Mark, isn't he?
Yeah. He's sometimes the designated guitar tech for Mark when he's too lazy to pack up his gear. Gets Jimmy to do it.
Yeah, so there's a bit of... It's funny how that's like a crossover, but they're completely different musical spectrums.
And like, the Germ fans would absolutely hate Lord.
Probably vice versa.
They're probably vice versa, yeah, more than likely. That's weird. It's funny, like, it's such a... I don't know if you'd agree, but it's such a Wollongong thing as far as, like, at least from my perspective being an outsider, because I've never lived here, but all the Wollongong musos at least appear to be sort of incestual as far as they all... all just playing with each other's bands or projects or forming new
things. You think metal is bad? Wollongong is so fucked. The music, like, seriously, ever since, like, I've lived in Wollongong my whole life except for, like, 2 years. And, like, you have bands here that are, like, the local legends.
Yeah.
And they've done maybe one Sydney gig in, like, 20 years or whatever. Yeah. Like, if you, like, played the Octave Tavern, you have made it. You're a king. Like, I have no love for the Wollongong scene at all, so I proudly say Trot Organ is Wollongong's finest whenever I can, just to get a rise, if nothing else.
Well, I think you got to play a few more shows at Dicey's or something like that before you can really take that title.
Yeah, we moved up to the Uni Bar now, so that's all right. We're playing our going away show there.
That's a big time now.
Well, I mean, I'm guessing we're playing the small stage, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, that's as far, the big one. That's as far as we got. We weren't allowed into the bigger room. We struggled to fill in the
small place. To be fair, though, it's a pretty damn big room.
It is a big room. Yeah, actually, I'd much rather play in a tiny place than a big room three people.
We did the 12-foot ninja shows in the main part of the Uni Bar, and, like, there's a fair few people, but, like, to fill that up, you'd need upwards of 500, I would think.
Yeah. There's been a few shows over the years that we played where, actually, there's one we played out in Broken Hill, and Tim's sister has a pub out there, and it's this massive theatre. It's huge. And back in the day, they used to get, like, I'll just make up bands now, but, like, Cold Chisel and whatever would go through, but all these big 80s acts would go through and they'd play there, and it would literally, this place would hold probably 1,000 people. It's like metro size.
Oh, in Broken Hill?
Yeah, it's really impressive. You walk into this corridor down the side of the pub, and then you just open these doors and there's just this theatre with a balcony and everything, and then you're just like, what the hell?
And you just played there?
And we played there.
Is this where you had to get the $10 million in liability insurance or something?
No, we played in another place in Broken Hill, it was another theatre for an all-ages show, and we needed it for
Keep
that.
Keep playing in Broken Hill. Who's booking your tours?
Well, you get me. But the last time we played there with Electric Dynamite, and there was some sort of local rivalry between some of the metalheads and the security that was looking after that venue, and something had happened a few weeks prior, so they boycotted the show.
Sounds like a Steve Ravick movie.
And so we had about 10 payers. And so,
Because there was, like, scene.
Apparently. Well, I'm going to use that as an excuse. Actually, there's only 10 people in the town that were interested in seeing us. But no, we played there previously. We had, like, 100, 150 people. But this time around, there was just, like, 10 payers. And we played with a couple of local bands. I think the PA didn't show up on time. And there was, like, it was just this sequence of bad events that just happened. But it's like, imagine playing the Metro and then just 10 people standing in front, and that's it. And they weren't even standing in front. So there was, like, two people that were standing a little bit back from the stage, and then the rest of them just sort of scattered throughout the venue, some sitting up the back against the bar, some having a chat amongst themselves, and then we're just playing on stage trying to be heavy metal.
The worst bit about doing shows like that, I find, is that I feel bad for the crowd, because, you know, the people there, they, like, came to have a good time. And then they're just sitting there like, oh, well, I can't leave. Like,
I don't want to be seen walking out. Like, I've got these sympathy pains for the band.
They thought they were coming to have, like, a good night and socialise.
So bad. The only time that's rivaled that is I wasn't playing, but when we were in Europe for Dungeon, and we played, like, this primary school hall, I'm sure you've heard some of these stories.
You weren't playing though, were you? I was just
carrying the beers and pressing some light buttons.
Is that the one that was you turned down a festival to do it or something?
Oh yeah, all right.
Should I not get into that?
No, I'll tell it. One day I'll have Tim on. I'll let Tim go through all these stories because he tells these stories so well. But we're at the end of the tour with Megadeth, and the last show was in Athens, and the tour manager or whatever offered us an extra show in, is it Thessaloniki or whatever it is, another part of Greece. But it was a festival with, like, Dream Theater, Anthrax, and blah, 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 and there was a spot that opened up. I think a band pulled out, so they said, oh, Sus Dungeon, they're with us at the moment, they can just come along. And we turned it down because back in Germany, one of the shows, we had a local German band who lent us all the backline, and we promised them that we would do a show with them after the Megadeth tour finished. So they booked a show in this little town. I can't remember where it was. And anyway, Dusseldorf or something like near there. And So we just said no, and we're like, oh man, that sucks. But no, we're proud that we're like, you know, keeping our word, and that's more important than anything else. And we're like really.
You've learned your lesson now, right?
Oh yeah, we have. Yeah, stuff.
Favors aren't worth anything.
I'd rather piss off people. Hey, but so we went back to Germany, met up with these guys. They took us to the venue. It was a primary school hall. And we're like, oh fuck, all right. And then there was a few bands playing, and this band. This German band, they're not massive, but they've got a relatively good following, at least in Germany. But then when we got there, the guy from the band who's putting on the show said, oh, heads up, I'm a bit worried about tonight because there's a big German soccer match on. And we're like, oh, okay. And then we're talking amongst each other going, wouldn't he fucking know on that before he booked the show? Or why would he have the show anyway, knowing that it was on?
And only tell you as you get there.
Yeah, like literally as we're loading our gear in, and he's telling us this. So anyway, the show goes on, and there was probably about 10 or so payers there, but no one's standing up the front, and there was one guy in a wheelchair who was right at the front there, and he was just standing there,
Yeah, real nice. Real inclusive.
Really inclusive. He was up the front in his wheelchair, just bopping his head, and I'm standing back pressing these buttons in a primary school or whatever, hall or whatever, and just going, this is the worst ever. And I've never seen a group of depressed adults like these guys were after that show. That we had
just
some
knowing what could have been.
We got some free beers, and they were like really horrible, like VB equivalent German beers, and we're just sitting around outside, and there was a couple of like heavy metal warriors in battle jackets coming up asking for, I don't know, maybe a signature or something like that from the guys, and they were just gritting their teeth because they were just so down and feeling so shit about this
never
show.
Again will we do the right thing.
Oh man. And I think that just still eats at everyone even to this day. It was just incredibly bad. But so that Broken Hill show only arrived. That rivals that German show as far as probably the worst ones.
I'm trying to think. I don't think I've had any. Like, obviously, I've done many a show playing to 10 people.
Yeah.
But I can't. No immediate shockers come to mind. Although, yeah, there was one in Germany actually when we went there the first time with Aylstorm. The week before we played there, the roof of the venue collapsed. They're like, oh, we'll still have the show.
I don't know why I laughed. But
no, it is funny. And then we played it and, like, it was a shocker. Like, the sound guy, just he knew he was gone in a day.
Yeah.
And so he just, like, cranked us all up. It was just...
What's...
And it sucked because there was a big crowd.
Oh, really? Oh, well.
No, because it made us seem bad.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But, is that a case of... What? Was that the house guy?
Yeah,
with the venue?
Yeah, we didn't bring our own guy.
No, okay.
We don't have that sort of funding.
No, neither do we. No, we just cross our fingers and hope for the best.
We just are all about minimizing our backline now. So, like, literally, me and Pete, just digital, go straight to front of house. We have backing track straight to front of house, one vocal center,
yep,
and drum kit. So, we're even more minimal than you guys because we have less guitar and less vocals.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go. I still laugh when I see guys like lugging their tube amps and whatever onto planes or their campers or whatever. It's just like, oh man.
How good is this? I'm just going to give them a shout out because I was giving them a bit of a ribbon over it. But like the band we're playing with in Europe this time, Etherealm from America.
Yeah.
Awesome band.
Yeah.
So good. They're kind of like Winter Sun, but actually good and not thieves for starters. But, they haven't toured overseas before, and they haven't... Because, like, you know, America, you just drive everywhere, so they haven't really flown a lot ever. Yeah. And he's like... And I was like, oh, what are you guys doing for backline? He's like, oh, I'm not sure if we're going to fly our cabs over or not. I'm like, man, literally no band in the world except Metallica will fly with their cabs.
I don't think even Metallica would fly with their cabs. I think they just go and buy new meshes across like, for the front of them.
Yeah. I'm like, get a digital thing. It'll save your life.
Man, I remember doing a show with a band from Perth. We played in Kalgoorlie. This was only a couple of years ago, and we hired a van in Perth and drove out with the trailer. Well, no, not with the trailer initially. They rocked up with like three guitars each because they were going to have guitar changes in their set because they had different tunings, and they didn't tell us. And then we realised that our little 12-seater coach wouldn't fit like 12 people plus like
100 guitars.
Yeah, and so we had to like pay for an extra trailer just so they could put that
in. When you say we...
Oh, I think they paid for the majority of the trailer. Yeah, but it was a bit awkward there because I think initially the conversation was like, oh, we'll just split the costs. And we're like, well, hang on. We've got like three guitars because there's three people that play guitar in the band and that's it.
You have 20 guitars.
And I think the drummer had like this massive over-the-top kit as well, so he brought that along. Actually, no, he had his own car. Anyway, but regardless, it was like...
Don't you hate drummers that have big kits? And aren't even good, and like, don't use it.
Man, so many times over the years we've played shows, especially like when you tour, because you don't bring your kit, so you just have to rely on gear sharing.
And well, so, we always fly with our kits. Oh. Checking in bass drum. Oh. Triple bass drum.
It's so bad. I remember just like these guys would have these like, I don't know, $10,000 kits or whatever is the equivalent of an expensive kit.
Sounds expensive to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what kits cost, like a couple hundred bucks? Yeah, sure. And they're like, you know, rack mounted, or they got like double bass drums and all these massive sort of cymbal setups and everything. And then you ask them if you can like play it and they're like,
nah, man.
Nah, or yeah, but don't move anything. And so the drummer's got to try and play exactly how that other kid's set up, and they get so precious over their
shit. You know, the only thing worse than that is when that drummer is in the opening band and they insist on using their kit, and it's like...
Yeah, that's it. And then you got to try and lug that off, and they take forever because they want to pack everything up on stage as well, so they bring all the cases out.
Wait, is this including the time they spend like shaking hands with their friends from the stage and giving out the set list to like their mate?
The local heroes.
Someone brings in the beer. Man, that's the good thing about Trolled Organ, that we've just gotten to the point where we're so arrogant. We're just only doing shows now that we want to do.
Yeah.
And it's made such a difference. Like, we stopped playing for a year. And because, like, I've... It's a bit of a tangent, actually. It's not related to anything. Because it kind of relates to just talking about all this crap stuff of being, like, a local band. Like, because every band's just like, yeah, you got to play as much as you can. It's all about exposure. And I was like, nah, man. I reckon we should try. Don't play for a year. See if people want to see us. And it has made a difference. I reckon we've gotten bigger from not playing.
I think now it's like, it's so much better to do it that way, because it's hard enough to get people out to a gig anyway these days.
Yeah, let alone to see the same band they saw.
Yeah, that's it. And especially I'm the prime example of this now, and I never thought I would be, because I was always like, oh yeah, I'll go out and support the scene, blah,
man,
blah, blah, and go out
there. Three words I never want to hear again.
Support the scene. But now I'm like, no, I won't go and see that band, because I'll see them again in 6 months or whatever. Or like, I'm sure there'll be a better opportunity down the track where I don't have to like spend extra time traveling or coordinating other things and whatever. It's like, I'll wait until next time. And now, like, it's like for so many bands that still play every second week or every month or so in the same venue, in the same city or town or whatever, it's just, it doesn't work.
And there's no one... This is super... To me, I don't find there's really, in the metal scene at least, anyone in Sydney doing really anything really different.
Yeah.
And there's no new bands really stepping up, it seems.
Nah. Oh, I wouldn't know. Well, yeah, I haven't been to shows for ages either, so... And I think...
That's the thing, but I feel like there's nothing that's made me go like, oh, gotta go see this.
Yeah, and I think even the bands that have got a bit of a following in Sydney aren't doing a great deal online either to sort of...
I think it's all online, and I've had like a lot of disagreements with people about this, but it's all about if you have good music, people will come.
Yeah.
And like I know a lot of people subscribe to that. You got to network, you got to make friends, but it's almost like a Ponzi scheme. Like everyone's just there buying their mate CDs, so then their mates come to their band. My goal is to be such a dick that everyone hates me, and yet we still get booked because people want to see it. I might need to learn violin first. But you know what I mean? Like, if you're good, people put you on and people see you. Like, I hate the idea that you have to make friends and, like, be seen, like, as a guy in the scene.
Well,
because it hasn't proved to work.
Nah. And especially when you put gigs on that are just your mates, like, and the mateship overrides the fact of whether that band can actually pull people or is actually doing a good job or puts any effort into anything that they do. It's more of a case of, well, we're going to put on some shows and let's just get our mates on, and then bitch and moan when there's like 20 people that rock up and go, oh, this is crap. It's like, well...
We're kind of finding ourselves a bit stuck with Trolled Organ, because for what we do, like what we're going for, the atmosphere, there's not a lot of bands that we feel fit that vibe, or if they do, they're kind of smaller than us.
Yeah.
So we're to the point where we're thinking we kind of have to almost cultivate our own sort of, because obviously there's bands we fit with, but like as it goes on, we're getting more and more specific as to what we want to present in the show.
Yeah.
And so it just means our crowd's going to get smaller, but hopefully it's, we can start like working with people that really...
I reckon you just break every rule in the book, and when you do a show, don't pick a typical live venue. Pick like a tiny little club or something like that, and don't put any other bands on.
Yeah,
just you.
We're opening for ourselves in Sydney, because we're actually releasing a double album. The second album's a rap mixtape. So like, yeah, we'll open for us, because we really struggled to find like we're at a weird spot where we're not, we can headline Sydney, but not super comfortably. So there's not a ton of bands in Sydney a great deal bigger than us, but there's a lot at a similar level to us, so it feels awkward asking them to open for us, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So we're kind of like perpetual, like, middle band.
But I think...
So when we're headlining, it's hard to get a lineup where we're the biggest, but...
I think it's just all perception, really, because, I mean, there's someone I know who's talking... is in a band and they haven't played for quite a while and they're trying to work out a way to do like their debut show back or do a launch show, and they're trying to work out the best way of doing it. Should they play with a bigger band and just be a support, or should they do their own, blah blah? And I just said, just pick a random like bar somewhere, like maybe in the Cross or Darlinghurst or whatever, hire it out as a private function room and that fits maybe 50 people.
Yeah, smash
get,
that.
Get your mates and then just publicise it's been sold out. And that's it.
No, but you're true. Perception is definitely...
And everyone online won't know that venue. There'll be a small percentage...
Or they'll see his comeback show sold out.
That's it. And they'll be like, this venue is sold out. And they'll be like, oh man, there's hype.
And that's what I don't really... What kind of grinds me about supporting the scene. And I just sound like a dickhead, but I'm not a social person anyway, so it's not like... but the more you're seen out there in the scene... The more your perception is, oh, there's that mate, like there's that guy. So when you see him on stage, it's like, oh, there's me mate on stage.
Yeah.
We're like, I want people to see you on stage and be like, that's a band, that's a show.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, feel like a show, like when you go to see a real band, quote unquote.
And I think it's that whole dressing up or some sort of image or visual on stage. Because I think you guys did, I don't know when it was. It wasn't last year, it might have been the year before. You guys did a show, I think Andrew Craig put it on. Is that the Stag?
That was really good.
It was like, I didn't go to it. I think it was overseas.
It was our album launch.
Yeah, and you guys had like this whole carnival sort of thing set up.
Yeah, Andrew killed that. He did so much work for that and it paid off. We got 75 pre-sales or something.
That's unheard of for Sydney, for people like, that don't understand. Like, no one buys pre-sales.
The lineup, there was no, the supports was a magician. Like,
it wasn't you, was it?
No, it wasn't me. It was a real magician, but like, I honestly don't know how we pulled that off. I think that was a perfect mix of, like, we'd just come back from Europe. That was our album launch. Was getting a bit of buzz of that.
Yep.
Andrew really promoted that hard and had a solid theme.
So what did you have? Like, because I think Andrew was telling me you had, like, some sort of sideshow alley sort of set up, like some...
Yeah, I had Goosebumps playing on a projector the whole time. And then, like, there was balloons in the roof we had released when we played. And they had show bags. Like, if you were the first 50 people in, you got a show bag with, like, popcorn and stuff. Afterwards, it was a mess. But, like, so that was the example... Yeah, that's kind of goes with what you're saying. If you make it of something special,
that's it.
It'll pay off.
It's got to be an event. It's got to be something where afterwards people go, oh, fuck, I missed out.
Yeah.
And then they can see everyone talking about it. Like, even like when we do a normal show, I'm trying to get like whoever's taking photos, so just take photos of people having a good time. Like, take a few of us, but don't like waste all
of
your...
Hire a bunch of women to come to the show and take photos.
Yeah, that's it. I said, take people, like, take photos of people wearing our shirts or people drinking, people laughing and having a great time and put that...
I hate all those things.
Yeah.
Merch, drinking, having a good time, laughing.
I'm staying home. Yeah. But, I mean, that's the stuff where people will sort of look online the next day and go, oh, man, that looks like a really cool night.
That's true.
I might make the effort to come out next time. I'm sick of seeing live photos. When someone puts up a new photo album on Facebook with 150 freaking live photos of the same four guys from one show.
And every shot, you're forgetting the most important, but every shot is specifically designed to make you not realize there's no one behind that front row.
I like that though. Because
I always go through and like...
try and find the one that's got the empty room in it. Oh man. We always talk about that in our band group chat because sometimes there's photos. There's one band in particular I saw the other day. I won't name them. But somebody who was there in the crowd took a photo and stood like back. And you could see like the four people within the first 5 meters from the edge of the stage back. Yeah, and there's just no one there. And I just thought, oh man, like you could have just took like 3 steps forward and maybe did a bit of cropping. That poor band.
Going off what you just said, my mate was telling me this the other day. Could you imagine what would happen if every band's group chat got made public?
Oh.
I'm pretty sure every band has just like, you can't release that
I think
stuff.
You've been in some group chats on Facebook with us, maybe when you were doing Fillion? Or was maybe. That MySpace days?
That might have been when Facebook was still in its infancy.
Maybe. I know Simon definitely has.
But like this, I'm pretty sure every band's is pretty...
Yeah, they're pretty full on. Yeah. Like, because we use... I don't know what you guys use. Do you use Facebook still?
Still? What, is there something else?
Yeah. We use Slack.
So I've never heard of that.
It's like, it's meant to be some sort of, if Tim is listening to this, LT, he'll like probably cringe with my explanation of this, but it's like this, it's a group chat program application that a lot of businesses use. So a lot of startups all rave on about it. And it's just, it's basically like this chat program, but it's divided into channels. And so you can just create your channels. So for us, it's got like album,
oh, cool,
debt, finances, touring,
oh,
blah,
man,
blah. And so it's all categorized and you only chat about those things in those channels.
That sounds amazing. Oh, yeah, so only chat about those things. We have like five different Trollhagen chats. It's like Trollhagen serious, Trollhagen joke, Trollhagen live. Yeah. And it still is just like, oh, just a mismatch. That actually sounds really good.
Yeah, so we got like store, general, like general band stuff. And then we just got random, and random's where all the shit talking and everything is. So every time we see something in a feed on Facebook, there's screenshots put in there and then just ripping into someone. So if that, fantastic, if that aspect of Slack got online, we'd be in so much trouble. We'd be in so much trouble.
You wouldn't be the only ones, at least.
No, no. We might get a bit of sympathy from some other bands out there.
Every band out there.
Yeah.
I feel like I've come off as really grumpy and negative in this. I'm not trying to. I think it's just what you said. Like, I don't think shows are presented as being fun. No. That's what I was going to say. I don't know if you want to hear it, but
no.
Triple J actually opened my eyes to that so much.
Yeah.
I've always written them off, but then they played Viva Las Vegas from the last album.
Yep.
And immediately our crowd changed. They only played the song like five times, if that. And like, once you started getting non-metal people to shows, it's like, oh man, this, the metal scene is,
you can see
really
how much
stagnant.
We're missing out.
Yeah, like we have a lot of girls at our shows now.
Yeah.
And it sounds stupid, but the difference that makes is like, I guess it makes them more, definitely more social in that, like, if people are moving and dancing, like, the truth is, it's a lot more socially acceptable if a big group of mixed people are doing it than if a bunch of battle jackets, like, dancing. I can't even imagine that. Do you know what I mean? Like,
just shaking their hips.
Like, yeah, and I'd kind of always written off that, but then we've seen the difference in crowd, and it's funner playing to people that are less kind of invested in that lifestyle, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And we had a glimpse of that years and years ago, especially when like the Gaelic days and the Gaelic club,
man,
was open.
It was the Gaelic.
It was so good. So good.
I was the tail end of that, but
yeah. And it was just such a, because it was, I was going to say it's in the central location because it was next to Central Station, but it was, the location was good. It was easy to get to. Anyone in the city could get there. And it was like a social thing. So the girls would come out either because their boyfriends are there, or a whole group of them would go out drinking and they'd go and see a show. And for us, we always try to make those shows at the Gaelic a bit of an event, so some sort of novelty, whether it be, I don't know, pirates, or we'd be having like crazy giveaways and stuff like that.
I wish, I talk about this all the time with all my mates, I wish I could go back to the time when I cared about metal stuff, because like some of the lineups, like I remember the Set in Stone album launch of the Gaelic, I think it was with, what's the Japanese band? Really, really good.
Oh, Argument Soul?
Yeah.
Oh, no,
that was the Vanishing Point one, maybe.
That was the Vanishing Point one, because we played another show down
the
road.
That's right, but Tim was at the Vanishing Point show, TY, even though he said he was sick or something. But yeah, like, I remember you had the free Set in Stone giveaway, watched the Gaelic. Like, and I used to froth over those so hard, and it makes me sad that nothing these days gives me that sort of enjoyment.
Yeah, because we had, we did pre-sales, and we're trying to get people to buy pre-sale tickets, and we had, I mean, we printed so many copies of that album, and we just thought, fuck it, we'll just give away like 100 of them. So we just said the first 100 pre-sales, and we smashed 100 pre-sales for that show, and then everyone else rocked up on the night. But there's so many free CDs that were given away, and we just told people, go to the merch table and show your ticket or whatever it is, and you get a free CD.
Nice humble brag, by the way.
What was that?
Nice humble brag. Before I was like, oh yeah, we pre-sold 75. You're like, that's unheard of for Sydney.
Well,
and around once we smashed 100.
Yeah, what, almost 10 years ago
to
now.
To be fair, Lord is a lot bigger than Trollhagen.
Ah, well, who knows what it is now.
For now,
that's right.
We'll be back.
That's right. It'd be like the Kiss story with Blue Oyster Cult that they keep talking about.
I'll tell you the difference for us though. Once we kind of gave up on the idea of becoming quote unquote big and stopped caring, that's when it like started, I guess, happening. Do you know what I mean? Like once you stop being invested in, like, we have to do this to come off this way and do this and have like a plan. We just do dumb shit.
I think people can sniff it out.
I think
they can
sniff
out when you're desperate and you're just hounding people for opportunities for shows or whatever. Like, we did it for years. I'd be emailing everyone under the sun for like the.
What, you?
Oh, yeah, who would have thought? I remember emailing Frontiers Touring to see whether we could be the support for Green Day. Because
that would have been interesting to see.
I think T.Y. was still in the band. I think he might have been egging me on at that stage. But it was, the whole mindset was just, throw the bait out there, and whoever takes a bite, just go for it. And even if it's ridiculous, we'll find a way to spin it to make it work for us. But at the same time, we're more focused on asking people for things rather than just getting on with it and just doing our own stuff and making it great. And it's only been the last few years where we've had all these other commitments in life, whatever it might be, where we haven't been able to put as much time and focus into the band, that the band's actually had the best opportunities it's ever had.
Yeah.
And it's so weird. There's just something about it.
It definitely is what you're saying, like the desperation. Once you stop kind of caring and become less invested in, man, we have to do this to make it happen, then you're like, oh, this is a sick opportunity, we'll do it.
Yeah.
And it's like,
and it's,
I don't know.
It's weird because even for us, like, you get offered something really cool and everyone's like, oh, man, I don't know. Like, and like, 5 or 6 years ago, you'd be like, who gives a fuck about anything else? This is happening. This is the priority. Now it's like,
Trollhagen is so jaded. Like, we've played with or got feedback from the bands that inspired us.
Yeah.
Like, members of Mr. Bungle have said they liked us. Yeah. The songwriter Finn Troll loves it. But the bands that we wouldn't be there without, we support a Finn Troll and we're like, man, this sucks. I don't give a fuck. Like, just who cares? It's just a band. And when, like, 10 years ago, I was like, oh my God, I'm supporting this band and it's not for 5 months away and I'm going to practice every day.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it's like, I have to go leave my house tonight.
Yeah, that's right. Oh shit, I better pick up my guitar.
I better
like,
put
the afternoon
on.
Of the show. Yeah. Yeah, it's weird how it works like that. I'm sure there's a lot of like musos who would be listening and like sweating themselves trying to like be the next big thing or trying to get the opportunities and just like fuck you guys, like blah blah, you know, you got to put the time and the effort and the passion into it. But it's, I mean, it's not that you don't do it, it's just it's that
you've done it.
Well,
that's the way I've been explaining it. Like, so I'm in my late 20s now, and it really annoys me, and you were probably in the same boat. Like, I spent my early 20s playing in like bands that, like, I guess quote unquote paying my dues, like just doing crap shows every show. And now that I'm getting older, like in the last year and a half, 2 years, started getting really good overseas touring opportunities, started actually making some money for music. But it's also the same time when my girlfriend wants to settle down and get a house. I need to focus on my job. It's like, why couldn't I have had that early 20s? So it's like, it's finally coming to fruition.
Yeah.
But I'm getting old and my hair's falling out.
Yeah, it's. I mean, some of these things now that we get, I look at it and go, man, like the 20-year-old me would be just frothing at this and I'd be on the verge of tears because I'd be so excited and pumped. And now, like, I'm always almost pissed off at myself because I'm not feeling it.
Oh, totally.
And I'm, like, looking at myself going, come on, like, think about this. Like, understand what this is. Yeah. And it's like, no, but
it's like, I wish I could be like, oh, sweet, I can't wait to hear this new Ed Guy album. Instead, I'm like, oh, I'll check out 10 seconds on YouTube.
Oh, well.
Except not the new song. It's a sticker.
Well, one example, yesterday, I think it was, Metallica had a live stream of the last North American show somewhere in Canada or whatever, and I thought, oh fuck it, I'll watch it and watch a little bit of it. And it was massive, like huge outdoor stadium, pyrotechnics, the lot. And I'm watching it and I'm going, this is pretty cool. And then I thought, you know what, like, if this was 16-year-old me, I'd be like, this would be the most amazing thing in the world.
Yeah.
But now, me now, I just look at it, I'm going, it's cool. It's cool. Yeah. And I remember seeing Metallica, like, whenever they were last out. And it was the only time I ever got to see them. And I missed them the first couple of times when I was a fan. And I was so upset that I missed them. And I remember, like, being a kid in Brisbane, and I'm, like, driving along this highway past the arena and going, oh, man, Metallica would have driven on this road. Being that kid and just being so psyched and wanting to be...
I wonder what they're doing backstage right now.
Yeah, like, they're in the same city as me. Oh, my God, this is amazing. And then when I went and saw them and I was sitting in the crowd watching them and I'm just like, meh. And I was, like... And I was really upset at myself because I'm like, I should be feeling more than this. And it's
I feel like I now get that feeling for more underground bands that I didn't think I would ever get to see because, it's the same thing like big bands. I'm like, of course I'll have a chance to see Iron Maiden or whatever. But then, like, at Summer Breeze, I saw Agarlock.
Yeah.
That freaked me out.
Yeah.
Because you're a big Agarlock fan, aren't you? Like, I was, like, in this distance of them.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I'm too afraid to say anything. Like, and I saw them live and that gave me that feeling because
that's, cool.
that's a band you never think.
Yeah.
You're in the... But then, and then we're playing with Igor. Have you heard of Igor?
Igor? Oh, no, I don't think so.
It's, like, crazy, like, glitch metal baroque music. But we're actually playing with
Moroccan music.
Baroque, it's not Moroccan. It's kind of Moroccan. But, and we're playing with them in a festival in Germany and then in France in a few months. And like, that's true of me. That we'll be in the same room as them because that's someone I never thought I'd get the chance to see or be near.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a case of that we've had so many bands come out in the last 10 years or so that we never thought would ever come out here. Now we're a bit sport for choice, so we're like, meh, whatever. Like, who cares? Like, even when we did Prog Power last year and Blind Guardian were playing the next day, and we were like backstage and they're walking around and I'm just like, like,
oh, it happens so much. Like, you play with a band you want to see and then you realise, oh, they just finished, I've been talking the whole set and eating pizza.
Yeah,
I'll catch them next time. And then never.
I mean, like, outside in the bar talking to somebody I've missed the entire night, just all the bands that have played that I wanted to see. It's like,
what music do you listen to now? Like, has that changed and do you reckon that's got you out of it a bit? Or
the music I listen to is podcasts.
Sweet tunes.
The best genre. No, I don't know. No, I'm listening to heaps of synthwave.
Okay. You have a long drive, don't you?
Yeah, like, so I still do stuff up in Sydney, so I'm like 2 hours, 2.5 hour drive each way. So I do a lot of podcasts, but I listen to music. So there's synthwave stuff, and I sort of go back and listen to a lot of just older stuff. Mm. Because I was trying to think of what the last new album I heard. I can't remember what it was. And I just remember listening to something that was released that was relatively not too long ago and just going, meh. Like, I had to go back to when I was 16 where you were forced to like it.
Yeah, because you only got one CD.
Yeah, I got one CD and it didn't click straight away, and I knew that if I just worked on it, I'd eventually like it. But I'm like, I've got no time for this.
I can't do that. I just skip tracks like crazy. Like, I buy CDs so often because I'm after that. Like, give me a song. But then, like, you used to go to Utopia as a kid. Best thing ever.
Yeah.
I'd listen to that CD front to back. I don't think I could tell you the last time I listened to a CD.
Oh, man. Yeah, $30 on a CD. That's all your money gone. And then you'd have to, like, be forced to read the lyrics and then all the liner notes and study the artwork and everything on that CD and just go, I will like this. I will like this.
I'll tell you how much I used to love music. Once when I was, I guess I would have been 16 or 17, the first Australian tour, I actually lined up at Thurool Ticketek wearing a Dream Theatre t-shirt. Only person standing there to get tickets to Dream Theatre at the Horner Pavilion.
Oh, yeah, okay. I remember that.
And that was a damn good show.
That was, I remember that one. That was the first time they came out?
Yeah. Did an evening with.
Yeah. And that was a band that, you know, I really loved, like, a few of their albums, and then by the time they came out, I was there, and I'm just like, okay.
That was just as I was at the tail end of them, I think. Because they were, like, the band that, like, I went Metallica, Pantera, Dream Theatre, then from there just prog. So they were, like, the band for me in my musical development. And it kind of annoys me that I don't get that from them anymore, but...
Especially in your Pantera years.
Oh, man, bro.
All right, so I wrote a bunch of notes down here, so let's see if I've covered everything.
No, you haven't covered everything.
I've got two more things, and I'll leave the best till last.
Is it a magic related question?
Maybe. When are you going to Europe?
September 25th, and the first show is September 29th, I think.
Okay, how many shows?
24 shows in 25 days.
Oh, fuck. That'd be good. So you got one day off somewhere in the middle of
that? In the Netherlands, we're going to go to Efteling, which is the best theme park in the world, and I'm so...
I've never even heard of it.
Oh, man, it's so good. I'm so excited for it. More than the tour, perhaps.
And that's with Alstom?
Yeah, and Aetherrealm from America.
Yeah, yeah. You'll have to get on Bobo's Adventures.
I'm not adventurous enough.
Those guys are like social media kingpins. They're doing really well. Like,
I don't think they could even tell you how they keep having such an upward trajectory. I guess just good songs, but like, it's amazing that they've gotten bigger and bigger with each album.
Yeah. They're still, I mean, they're nothing like you guys, but at the same time, they're kind of similar in the sense that they started off as this like pirate metal band, and now, like, there's a bit of it here and there, but they're more or less just writing whatever the fuck they want.
Yeah, and people are... Yeah, it's just... Yeah, good point. They're doing what they want, and people are liking it.
Yeah, what was the one, like...
Fucked with an Anchor?
Yeah, Fucked with an Anchor. That's a song. That's like, catchy as. And then the Mexico song?
Yeah. I don't know how they can consistently be so catchy. I'm really envious of their writing.
And, they must be playing... I don't know, are you playing similar venues or same venues that you played?
A couple of same, but like...
It must be bigger now.
Maybe bigger. The ones that aren't bigger, they'll sell better. Yeah. But like, they've already sold out like, I think, 1,500 in Netherlands, 1,200 in Paris. The tour's not for like 2 months. Like, it's so cool and crazy.
Yeah.
How much this is, like, doing well, it seems.
So for you guys, you mentioned before with gear, you're packing light, so you got a pretty simple setup. What do you do for merch?
Yeah, good question.
You haven't worked it out yet?
Yeah, we just do shirts. Like last time, our first European tour, we were a bit, as I'm sure every band go the first time, we're like, oh, 24 shows? Well, obviously we're going to sell at least 10 t-shirts a show. No.
Not
even close. We still got some shirts left over.
Did you have to match their prices?
No. Alestorm are the best band to tour in the world. They treat, because they're at the point they spend like 5 or 7 years or whatever doing tours where they're the opening band,
yeah,
and the band sells.
So they've had to cop it.
Don't walk outside of this tape. You can't eat dinner with us, blah, blah, blah. So they're all about getting bands they want to play with.
Yeah.
So like, we're good friends with them. They treat us like we're headlining band. We're allowed to get a backdrop. How cool is that?
Oh, that's
and,
pretty
and drum riser for support band.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so like they treat us well better than they should.
Yeah, that's awesome. I remember, must be their last tour out here, and because we were down in Melbourne playing a show.
Yeah, so you had had quite a few drinks, I think.
Yeah, just I was sloshed. And so I rocked up to the show, I think, just as they were starting, maybe. And
yeah, because I saw you side stage, I was like, oh, what are you doing here?
Oh, I'd had about 12 or 13 beers throughout the day watching John Farnham, and I was on a John Farnham high.
And whenever you're in a room with the amazing Phil.
Oh, yeah, from Lagerstein, yeah. Well, there was
Ex-Lagerstein,
yeah. He had a bottle of, Captain Morgan or whatever? And so he made me skull a bunch of that. And then they had, I don't know what it was, in like Mount Franklin water bottles, some sort of spirit.
Jungle juice, maybe, I don't know.
And then we were all sitting on the side of the stage, like on little deck chairs, watching Alestorm play. And it was just the most ridiculous thing. And I thought, what's going on? Like, why isn't anybody from Alestorm just kicking out all of these
people?
Oh,
man, it's crazy.
There's so many
pissed people
especially
like people listening, if they don't know, most of the time with international bands, like, it's their job. They don't want to mess around. They just kind of want to get to the venue, relax. They have no interest, and nor should they, I guess, in making it life easy for the support bands. So a lot of the time, like, you're told, like, they tape off the stage, you can't walk here, you can't do this, price match on merch, but then you get some bands like Alestorm where they're just like, nah, man, we've dealt with that shit, just do what you want.
It was absolutely nuts, that show, because there was so many drunks around.
And it was like a Sunday night or Monday night or something?
It was a Sunday night, yeah. It was just the most
ridiculous. What about work in the morning?
Oh, I got so hammered. I remember just walking. Everyone went to Cherry Bar afterwards, and then I didn't even make it there. I was trying to find the hotel, and I was sending like these incoherent text messages to the rest of the guys to try and find me. And then I bought like 40 nuggets from Macca's, and then spewed them up everywhere.
Chicken nuggets.
Just, yeah, it was a good night. It was a good night.
Yeah, no. Cherry Bar got really weird. That's what I remember. Like, I don't even drink in it. I was like, this is so weird.
Oh, man. How does that work for you with being around a bunch of...
Do you know what? It's crazy. It's fine. I'm so lucky that all my friends are not dickheads.
Yeah.
So they don't care. And like, no one in Trolldoggen is a massive drink. Like, they drink, but especially when we're touring and stuff, they're like, okay, we're doing 24 shows in a row. We can't write ourselves.
Yeah.
I think like usually everyone writes themselves off 1 or 2 days, and that's enough to be like, I'm done for the tour.
Yeah, we've learned a lesson. That's enough. Yeah.
But no, it's never been an issue.
Yeah, I think...
Except there's no soft drink backstage. That pisses me off. It's always just beer or water.
Well, Tim always has that problem because he doesn't like beer and he'll drink spirits, but spirits are always expensive. And so it's never on a rider unless you request it. And even then, it's like getting blood out of stone to try and convince somebody. So it's usually just water. And even sometimes, like we did the Dragon Force thing the other week and they gave us a crate of little creatures. And I'm like, oh, this is fantastic, but I had to drive and end up taking the whole case home. And Daryl didn't want to drink anything and he was driving. Mark doesn't drink anymore and Tim doesn't drink beer. And then we're like, oh, we need water for the stage. And they didn't put any water in the dressing room. So I had to go up and I asked the bar 3 times and eventually they were talking amongst each other. I said, and we had 5 minutes before we started. I said, guys, the water. And they said, look, it's actually not on your rider. You have to get approval from the tour manager. I said, you've just given me an $80 case of beer. I said, take half the case and give us water, like whatever. And then eventually the tour manager will pass kids, just give them some water. And so they gave us like, I don't
bottle
know.
Bottle each.
Yeah, something like that. Bottle. The equivalent of like a bottle each or something. And it's like, oh my God, this is so bad. And it's like, water's more precious than beer.
Yeah.
But it's so difficult. And then, yeah, if you drink soft drink, good luck.
I hope there's some in Europe. There will be.
Europe's hard as well because...
Europe's all sparkling water. So the amount of times I've been on stage and take a big swig of water and it's all fizzy. I'm like, oh, what the fuck is this?
I just remember going to like you know, bars or restaurants or whatever, and you're like, oh, I can't drink today. I'm just going to have like a Coke or whatever. And the Coke's more expensive than beer and water.
Yeah, it's just a lot cheaper than the beer.
It's insane. Absolutely insane. All right, so merch. You're going to have...
Oh, yes. Jesus Christ. Sorry, yeah, I got a lot of tangents. No, I think I come off as a massive dick on this podcast. So just tell everyone, I'm not... I was going to say I'm not that bad, but
I guess I am. Do I have to put a disclaimer at the start of this?
Just say Matt's a nice enough guy.
Trust me. Trust me. He's a good guy.
Yeah, merch. We'll just get 2 shirt designs. Pretty conservative amounts,
I'd say. Are you taking them over?
No, we actually found a printer in Hungary. Cool. $5 a shirt for 3 colours.
Oh, yes.
We pay like $11. We get ripped off on shirt design.
Well,
like
actually,
crazy.
That's interesting because we do... we're printing shirts in Florida.
Really?
And full colour. And we're paying like $9, $10 a shirt.
That's all right. Does that include shipping?
No. So, no, actually, by the time we shipped them back over, it was equating to about $10 a T-shirt. But you had to print sort of... minimum of a couple hundred.
How bad is it that $10 a shirt is considered okay? Like, that's... CDs is where the money is. Ironically, because no one buys CDs.
But it's crazy. Like, I'm trying to get T-shirts printed here in Australia because I only want small runs and it's so freaking expensive. But that, I mean... You go and get them printed in Hungary and still
pay. We're
just
going to ship to the venue, yeah.
Well, yeah, but even if you're just wanting shirts here in Australia, still get the guys in Hungary.
I think we're considering them, yeah. It can't be more than the price difference.
Well, we had to pay a fair bit in shipping, like a couple hundred bucks in shipping to get them back, but it still worked out cheaper.
Yeah, exactly.
So, if it's that cheap in Hungary, it's probably the shipping.
It has to be cheaper, yeah. And so, do we pay a tax going in or...? Depends on how you do it. Gift.
Oh, it depends. Yeah.
10,000 shirts.
I think it depends on the value and the quantity. But yeah, maybe we might have to talk about that off the record. We'll see. Yeah. There are some tactics, I think.
You need to interview a tax person.
No. You should claim everything. And
yeah, I agree. Yeah. You should definitely claim everything and not claim everything.
That's right. Absolutely. All right. So wrapping this one up. Yep. So your career in magic.
My career in magic, if you will, yeah.
So there's a bit of a reputation out there that you're one hell of a magician.
That's what I hear.
Yeah. So where did the whole magician thing begin?
Sorry, that's a magician's only answer. I don't know. I think I just saw Penn and Teller and I was like, oh, I've got to do me some card tricks. And I spent like 10 minutes. I was like, oh, you have to spend decades to get good at this. And then so I just made up my own way of doing dodgy tricks.
I think what you should do is start, and maybe this is something that we can get edited out if it's such a great idea so no one else steals it.
Okay.
But I reckon you should create your own YouTube channel that's an offshoot of Trollhagen, but it's like the a magician sort of side project of the band. Ooh. And whether it's you alone or the 4 of you, individual videos, just doing one magic trick per video.
I'll show you one of my magic tricks.
I reckon it'll go viral.
You reckon go viral? Well, the problem is no one else approves of my tricks.
Oh, really?
No, they think I'm a dickhead.
So we're scrolling through your Instagram feed at the moment.
There's got to be a trick here somewhere. I mean, this is riveting listening, I know.
No, trust me. This is enjoyable listening.
If nothing else, you get to see a magic trick. Look at this gem. You can tell the listeners how fantastic this is.
Oh, Gareth Murdoch likes it. So there you go. You got Alstom's approval. Oh, where you go?
That was actually a decent trick. I mean, the camera angle isn't flattering, but...
So we've got a card. Holding behind the card. It's gone.
Not bad, really. Good. I don't think I could do that now.
I reckon that's all right.
That was maybe peak magicianship.
So I think all you need to do is just use that video, put a bit of music behind it, something a bit wacky.
Maybe some Trollhagen music.
And put a little intro thing across the front and give it a ridiculous name.
Like Matt's Magic.
So even though that's a magic trick that probably thousands of people have probably done before, just give it a new name, rebrand it.
I'll be honest with you. If someone else did that, I wouldn't watch it.
Don't think about what you would like. Think about what everyone else would like. There's a lot of shit out there.
That's a good point.
Think about all those bird videos and cat videos and dog videos.
Just like, why bird video? That's a random...
Man, you don't know about burbs?
Oh, burb. I thought you said bird.
Like it is bird, but they call it burb.
Yeah. Memes.
Yeah, memes. That's right, yeah. Or as one guy called it the other
memes.
Day. Memes, yeah. All right.
Just gone to the point where... That's irony that could have been what he meant to say is some weird joke.
Just, yeah.
We have to stop before I start talking about memes.
All right, that's enough.
And just gets cringy.
All right. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Andy.
Bye. Thanks, everyone. Please go and check out Trollhagen's new album. And I'll put a link to their single and video clip and everything in there. I really, really encourage you guys to check it out. It's just eclectic. It's out there. It's really weird. It's nothing that you would expect. I'll just leave it at that. Just please go over to andysocial.net. I'm going to put a bunch of stuff in there, links to buy their new album, but also just to follow them on all their social media channels and just check out what they do. So it's really, really cool. But as mentioned at the start of the episode, they're about to embark on their European tour. By the time you're listening to this, they will be well and truly in the midst of that tour, playing with Alestorm all through Europe. So pretty cool. A little bit jealous, but very, very cool. So as always with all of our guests, if you want to go and support them or you want to contact them or you want to find out more about what they do and what they're involved with, andysocial.net is the best place to find all of those details. I've got show notes for every single episode so far, so please go over there. Thank you as always for listening, supporting as always, and you know how to support social media stuff, liking, sharing, et cetera, Amazon portal link, paypal.me, everything's over at andysocial.net, so please go over there. What is next week? Who knows? I don't even know at the time of recording this, but episode 100 is coming next week. Stay tuned. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.